This is a podcast called Walk, Talk, Listen. An attempt to connect people and make this world a bit better by sharing opinions and experiences based on the belief that everyone's perspective is true, albeit partial. My name is Maurice Bloem, and I would like to welcome you to yet another episode of Walk, Talk, Listen.
The church is in the world, man, and the church is out there for the world to change and for it to be a force of change in the world. Marshall McLuhan said, "On planet Earth, there are no passengers. We are all crew." So hi, my name is Matt Hackworth. I am Senior Advisor for Marketing and Communications with Chorus International, the parent organization of Lutheran World Relief and IMA World Health. I'm also a candidate for ordination in the Presbyterian Church USA.
Great. And it's nice talking with you again, Matt. You know, we go way back when we worked together for Church World Service, and you were also really instrumental in making previous 100-mile walk campaigns a success. So still many thanks for that. Well, you know why I chose to walk 100-mile. That's to raise awareness around hunger, as well as funds for hunger. Why would you walk 100-mile? What's the cause that, you know, you would walk 100 miles for?
You know, I think one of the things that spoke to me about the original 100-mile walk is the demonstration of solidarity that it offers to people in need. And inherent in that is the idea that caring for your neighbor as yourself is critical, whether or not you are a person of faith, whether or not you abide any kind of spiritual tradition. I think that in our best human selves, we understand that we should care for others as we care for ourselves. And so the thing that speaks to me about the walk is that it's sacrificing something for the greater good. And so for me, I much like the 100-mile walk, what I would walk 100 miles for is to lift up the needs of the poor. The work I do is absolutely because I have a call and a sense of duty to care for neighbors who do not as much as I do as a cisgendered, straight, white American male.
Oh, thank you. And if I would ask you what drives you in life, what would you say then? Something similar or?
So, I think what drives me in life is a great appreciation for what I have and where the world needs to go. I hold one in one hand and one in the other. And I believe that poverty, injustice, it's not only is it all related, people are born into poverty because we choose to continue to let it happen. And so therefore, knowing that it's a conscious human choice, I really believe in the power of story and testament to change that dynamic and to remind folks that just because you know, we're having a great time at happy hour, there are other people who can't reach that table of welcome. And so, you know, from my perspective, that is why I'm here on this earth. And I'm a dad, I'm a husband. Both of those things shape who I am and inform how I go about it. I love my family. I live for my family, and I want other people to be able to want the best for their families and to build on that.
And most recently, a couple of years ago now, right, you decided to change course a little bit in terms of, you know, studying. Tell a little bit about that, what you're doing and why.
Sure. So I was a journalist for 13 years, and I was drawn to journalism, I think, because why everybody gets into journalism. You're an idealist. You believe the power of truth and the power of story, and that someone, some entity needs to have the public interest in mind. But as I went through my journalism career, I knew that there was something more that I should do as far as curing social ills, being part of a solution that just did not... wasn't satisfied by my journalism experience. And so I left journalism to explore ministry. And I found Church World Service in that time. And so it was a wonderful marriage of my vocational experience and my faith tradition. And what drew me to be the reporter who was always willing to go to the housing project to talk to people, to be the reporter who was always at the soup kitchen. I mean, I had editors who would tease me when I was a journalist about, you know, you spend more time in the slums than you do at your desk. And my retort was, that's how you know I'm doing my job. And so, you know, my time at Church World Service was wonderful. And it really helped me strengthen the tie between my vocation and my faith tradition in that. Yes, I'm a Christian, and I do this work because I feel like it is the best way I can personally follow Christ. But then as I got older and did more of this work, I really wanted to explore the why of it all. And I felt like sort of, I don't know, it's like an itch you can't scratch, right? There's this inner urgency that says, like, no, you need to do this and to further explore and yet to cement and solidify who you are, Matt Hackworth, in doing this work. And for me, that solely rests on the foundation of my faith. And so that's when I decided to enter candidacy for ordination and go to seminary. And so I'm a little more than halfway through my seminary journey now and a candidate for ordination in the Presbyterian Church.
And is it bringing you what you were expecting so far? And what are you planning to do with it when you're done?
It's a great question. I can tell you I love seminary. I love the journey. I love the study. I love the debate. I love the challenge and the ways that it makes me articulate who I am and why I do the work I do. But more importantly, it gives me tools to hold God's church to account for making a better world. I think as people of faith, we are not called just to go worship in a big building and fund that upkeep of that big building. The church is in the world, man, and the church is out there for the world to change and for it to be a force of change in the world. And so my seminary journey and my ordination journey focuses solely on that, and trying to bear witness to the stories of suffering, injustice, and success, if you will, of pulling yourselves out of poverty that I can share.
You know, what is interesting, because in as part of this year's 100 Mile, I'm doing these virtual walks and talks, right? And also with young people. And it seems that, especially when I talk with them about religion and spirituality, it seems that what I'm hearing so far is it's still of importance for them, for the younger generation, but church is often not providing or giving them what they're searching for, what they're looking for. What is your experience and what is your view on this?
Sure. I mean, I think one of my big learnings of seminary and in my professional life is that everybody believes in something. Even people who avow no spiritual tradition or even hate the institution of church with understandable cause, they still believe in something. It is that point where all of us find a center and a reason for existence. I think what really speaks to the younger generation is the idea of unity rather than exclusivity. So I was raised in many accounts in a spiritual tradition where Jesus is the only absolute way to salvation, and it's all about checking enough boxes to, quote, get to heaven. And that, while that carries a lot of promise, well, I also think that it the flip side of that is something exclusive. It says, I'm better than you. And it's been my great joy to discover a component of faith that says, no, you know, it's not about, you know, checking boxes to get to heaven. It's about the idea of following Christ in my tradition, and ever expanding that table of welcome. And in that expansion is the concept of unity and of togetherness, and that your well-being, as my crazy Dutch friend, is up in my well-being. And the guy working on the house across the street who I don't know is more connected to me, even though I don't know him, than I might realize. And so I think there's something about that aspect that of unity and inclusivity and approachability and what I would call the table of welcome that speaks to young people. Ultimately, I think the church is changing. The church has always been changing. And so, you know, you can look at that two ways. You could look at that as an existential crisis and say, oh God, you know, pews are emptying, people are dying out. And all of that is true, but it's also true that people are intentionally finding ways to connect. And that church will change because of that. You know, I think the idea of even like a CrossFit or sort of these like folks who get together and they have dinner once a week, you know, all of those things speak to the community, the shared community that I would call church. We've just defined it really narrowly for far too long. So, yeah, I mean, I think younger people can not only show us the way, but shape a new way of doing church. That's great.
If not mistaken, you just returned from some travel, right? And you are a person that has to travel a lot around the world for your work. How does that, you know, those travels and what you see and what you experience, how does that, you know, inform who you are today?
I like experiences that may force me to adjust my perspective and surrender my privilege, and where you have just your own ability to relate and smile and connect to go on. You know, I like that. And that forces me to deepen my vulnerability. and to depend on others in ways that I don't in my day-to-day life. But that's just me personally. I mean, I just returned from Yemen, for example, and it's still an active war zone. And I saw probably the worst human suffering I've ever seen in my life there. And so being able to sit with people in the middle of their crisis and to learn of their story and their challenge and their hopes and their dreams, I have a responsibility to then relay those stories and recount those stories in circles of privilege. So, especially the institutional church. Otherwise, I'm just an imposter from out of town with a smile trying to learn the local language. But I take that responsibility of bearing witness to story and people's grief and challenge and being able to connect it and help somebody a world away realize they have a role to play in changing the world for the better for that person. I take that really, really seriously.
No, thank you. And piggybacking a little bit on what you said in terms of, you know, privilege, you know, what we are facing today, there are a lot of issues. We have COVID, you know, racial injustice, elections in many countries. What are some of the things you worry about and, you know, about this moment? And what are your hopes?
Quite honestly, I worry about violence. I worry that we have... I want to make sure I say this accurately. I worry that we have put on the mask of niceness and agreeing at all costs rather than learning how to disagree productively and find common ground. And that will come at the expense of solving our differences through violence. I worry about not reaching as far out as possible to invite people to the table of abundance and welcome. One particular passion I have is serving people with disabilities. My son is autistic, and that had a profound effect on shaping my life and my perspective. And I can't think of a more vulnerable category than being disabled and living in a developing country. While we continue to amass wealth, for what end? You know, it's not my role to make people feel guilty, but it is my role to help people find a way to contribute to solving problems like that. And so, you know, I think another big learning for me from seminary is that all injustice is related. Simply put, I think theology might be described as the study of power and how it's used. And whether you channel that power from a divine source or from your own brokenness, it's all connected. And so living in a world where difference is emphasized and rejected like two polar sides of a magnet, we're not taught to embrace differences and to see the divine in the other, you know, that's a tough world, and I worry about that. And it matters just as much as Minneapolis with George Floyd as it to the father I sat with in Yemen and held his daughter that had shrapnel wounds in her back. It all comes from that same source of brokenness. And so I worry about that. I worry about how do we raise a more emotionally intelligent, compassionate generation.
And are you hopeful that we will get there?
I am. I mean, I look at who's been protesting in the United States. Look at who's been protesting internationally. Look at Greta, a teenager who's leading the way on climate change. I see in younger folk great promise in the possibility of letting go of the old things that divided us. I do think we have a lot of education and shaping to do in finding ways to help younger folks learn to connect and operate from an emotionally intelligent center. But I think there's promise there, and I think there's possibility there.
One quick last question. What is the, you know, what would be your message for the listeners to this podcast?
Do something. Do something. One slight change, one adjustment to care for someone else outside of your family. If it's a can of food at the food bank, if it's reading one extra newspaper article on a problem you don't know about, do something. We all have a role to play in making this world a better place. Marshall McLuhan said, on planet Earth, there are no passengers. We are all crew. And so it's time for us to finally learn that we have the power to control these things, and that human suffering is just, it's made worse by our ignorance and indifference, and we can change it. Only we can change it.
Okay, thank you, Matt. Yeah, it was a pleasure. And thanks for sharing your experience, knowledge. And all the best with everything you do.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Walk, Talk, Listen. Please check us out on www.100mile.org or follow us on Facebook.